Welcome everyone to the Crit Rate Podcast for Wednesday, April 17th. This is episode 88. I'm your host, Justin Skirbo, and today I'm joined by Liz Caetano.
Nice.
She's back.
And I'm joined by Justin Chow.
Hey.
What's up, everybody?
Pleasure.
We're all on the other side. We made it. Last week I was the odd man out.
You were.
But now I've completed Final Fantasy.
Oh, I thought you were talking about eclipse.
No. Yeah. The eclipse? Why would we be talking about
the
eclipse?
We're on the other side of the eclipse.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. The world a lot of things have changed after the eclipse.
That's true.
Feels like we've joined a different universe or something.
Yeah.
Like
it's weird.
Final Fantasy VII.
Being done with Final Fantasy now is a interesting place to be because I feel like I've been in this hole for so long that I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, I know.
So now on the trip to Platinum, I'm like, I feel like I'm grasping at something that's no longer here anymore. And it's like, but it's almost gone.
Yeah. You know? I definitely watched like 10 hours worth of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth content afterwards because there was a vacancy.
And
yeah.
Being explained.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much of that. And also interesting like things.
I did also go back and watch the, those videos that you sent us about like
Genova and stuff.
Yeah.
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 That guy's good, right?
Yeah.
I like
that. Cause I watched his and the explained video, mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, this is the...
You're like, oh, I know this British voice. Thank you, Final Fantasy Union.
Yeah. Yeah, because also I was trying to explain it to Jason. He was like, what's happening? And I was like, okay, there's this thing called Genova, and something about... It's not Sephiroth, it's Genova. I gotta look it up. I don't really remember.
Sephiroth remains frozen in ice in the North Crater.
Right, and Sephiroth is Genova. So that's what I tried to explain to him, but I didn't have enough information to explain it, so I had to watch it again.
Yes.
And then show it to him, so I'd be like, see?
Now, it don't all you, makes
now,
sense.
Now that you've never played a Final Fantasy game, don't you? Are you interested?
He has never played a Final Fantasy
He's
game.
He's never played a Final Fantasy game.
He's missing out, but also...
I would imagine something like 16 would speak to him. I don't know.
There's just a... Yeah,
yeah, because, probably. I mean, he likes Devil May Cry.
That's what I mean. You know, and that's kind of a self-contained story. It's like, not that they're all not, but like that's a digestible game.
Final Fantasy games are definitely a specific taste, you know? Like, I definitely know a few of my friends who play shooter games who would never ever think about playing a Final Fantasy game.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and Jason is a shooter guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's not his cup of tea.
You know what it is? It's like Bowden has played and is familiar with Final Fantasy VII, and that is like not the demographic that I would imagine for Final Fantasy at all. So I think that opened up my mind to be like, yeah, anyone could play these
games.
Everyone. Oh, okay, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Nope, we play opposite games.
Yeah.
That's cool.
For nothing.
That gives you a lot of breath, you know? Like, you get to see and appreciate a lot.
Cover a lot.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we have a bunch of news to get into. But before we do that, do we want to discuss anything that we've been playing? I know I'm still neck deep in Final Fantasy World. I'm in Chapter 10 of my hard mode playthrough, about to do the combat sim stuff. I really hope that it doesn't murder me because I just want to be done with this.
I've only been seeing videos online, just thumbnails, that are saying things like the Platinum in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth ruined me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn. There's not like there's not just one or two videos. They're like rampant. So good luck. Godspeed.
Thank you. Yes. I am optimistically confident right now. But that's what I'm doing.
Misplaced.
What are you doing? You playing anything? Liz, you playing anything? Who's playing something?
We dabbled back into Baldur's Gate.
Nice. Dabbling. We've got some news about Baldur's Gate a little bit later.
Yeah, we're trying to do at least once a week.
Right. I'm in. I did buy and download and start playing Unicorn Overlord.
Nice.
And that has been nice. I never really took a vanillaware game, like very seriously. I've always wanted to do Odin Sphere, but like this has been.
Like, it's like Sentinels, didn't you?
13 oh,
Sentinels?
I did. That's where. Yeah, you're right. That was great. Yeah, it's been interesting. I still don't really have a formed opinion on it yet, but I do like the tactics side
of
it.
Is it beautiful?
It is. I mean, it's funny because it's like they literally just take the same art style and their animation style and they just put it into different types of games.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it, you know. Yeah.
But it's nice. It's nice so far. I'm really excited to jump into it. But I do feel a vacancy. There's something pulling me still towards Final Fantasy VII Rebirth again, and it's like it's weird, and I think it is just that I miss my friends.
Yeah,
I miss those characters.
There's some good meat still on the bone. Like as I've gone through, it's like I did everything on the first playthrough, everything possible, but I love that the new game plus chapter select thing allows your continuity to stay the same the whole time. Like you're never starting from zero again, which I appreciate.
Did you still have to, I guess if you're not doing the quest, you don't really have to. Yeah, so you don't have to go through like Ghouls and Gambits or whatever.
Nope,
and
none
like,
of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. That's amazing.
It's literally just main story.
Oh,
and
awesome.
And you know what the best part? Even the minigames that interrupt gameplay, like the dolphin jump thing in Junon, you could just skip it entirely.
I have to go back to Final Fantasy tonight.
It makes it go by so much more breezy. I don't think there's been a single minigame that, like, the first time that you have to do the Chocobo race, don't have to do it.
Oh.
It makes you, like start the
thing in Junon where you have to salute and do that whole dance.
That you do have to do.
That's fine.
Good point. One you do it. But you know what
they say?
But you know what's interesting about that?
Yeah.
You don't have to find all the people. So I just found the minimum amount and did the easiest one possible. And I was like, this is totally simple. If I mess it up, I don't care.
Was there different content? Did they say different things?
Yeah, no, they're different dances.
No. Oh, cool. Awesome.
Right. Dances. Yeah. They're not dances.
They're
marching
dances.
Things. Dances.
Salutes.
Yeah.
Choreography.
Things. Yeah. Military walkie things. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it goes by fast. It goes by fast. And it's funny because you start to realize, I feel like the structure of chapters gets so obfuscated when you mix in all of the open world stuff. Mm-hmm. So when you're playing, you're just like, oh, there's like the walkie section, a mini boss, a walkie section, a final boss. And that's every chapter. Like every single chapter works that way. I don't know. I like it. It's good.
I wonder if
it's funny because the second it opens the world map, all of your fast travel locations are there. So you don't even have to walk the world map at all. It's like... It's like, oh, you're in Junon? Cool. Boop. Now it's like, now you're at the next spot. It's great.
That is great.
I wonder if I was to bring somebody who's never played any of the Final Fantasy games ever into this game specifically and just do like normal or easy and then have them just play through the main storyline, just that. Would it be interesting? Would it turn them into a Final Fantasy fan?
Maybe.
Final Fantasy VII fan.
I mean, I definitely think the story is interesting.
The thing is, when you're playing this game fresh, doing the side content was gratifying. It overstayed its welcome, but I did like that part of the process, filling in the dots and all that.
It definitely gave more context with the characters. It gave them more like room to breathe a little bit and time to kind of like converse with one another. So like that was good character development at certain times. Just like the things that they would say once in a while, I felt like it was nice.
I would say that like I remember playing, and when you get to like the open world of After Calm, I was like annoyed with that part, and then when it like funneled back into the cave
Mithril Mine,
and then I was like, this is what this game should be.
Yeah,
like I'm having the right type of banter, I'm having the right amount of like, this is what I want to be walking around, what I want to be doing, how I want to be fighting, like all these things. And I remember because it was, I feel like, such a stark contrast to like the open world, like a sudden change and like shift into like what I wanted to be doing. It's like a very memorable moment for me in that game of like, this is also the best way that I'm like absorbing this character development as well. It's like these where they have that joke about like, I'll do it for 2000.
Yeah.
Like, this is the best writing this game so far.
Yeah. Dude, I love how they use that joke throughout the entire game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Well, I was like, this is what I want to be seeing is like these interactions with them. And I feel like the side stuff is just like, you know, Tifa saying like, we should help this lady make a soup.
With
true. And it's just like Cloud and just one other person, you know.
I did like the banter. You're right.
Yeah, it really was nice. It contextualized the relationships with those characters very, very well.
It's good. Yeah.
So,
it's good stuff. That game is over. We're done with it. Except we're still playing with someone.
Yes. I'm hoping by this time next week that platinum will be done. That's one that I feel like I'm going to feel really proud of. Like,
yeah.
But you know what I want to do?
You really worked for it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
He earned it.
It does give me this weird like brain scratch that bothers me where it's like, I want to have platinum trophies in all of the Final Fantasy games that have them accessible.
Yeah.
And I have 8, and I have original 7, and I have 7 remake.
You go back
and
to
I've got
the
16,
1-5.
And I've got 15. You know, I've got 1-4 right now. So it makes me want to. I've got to do 5-6. I have to do 9, but I'm not going to. I refuse to do 9. 9 is absolutely bullshit. That is the worst trophy list of any Final Fantasy game.
Why?
Because one of them requires you to. Early in trophy life cycles, there was one there was one trophy that they would, or one achievement that they would add to these games that was kind of ubiquitous with all of them, which is your main character has to hold every weapon in the game. Like, that's just the thing. They call it, like, Treasure Hunter or something. And it started with Final Fantasy 13. That was the first one that had it. And that trophy was notoriously impossible because you had to, like, save all your crafting material through the whole game and you had to craft all these things. It was a fucking nightmare. And the reason why it's a problem in 9 is because one weapon...
To get the weapon, yeah.
Yeah, to get Excalibur 2, which is Steiner's best weapon in the entire game, you have to speed run the whole game.
You have to beat
the game in under, I think, 22 hours, which is so impossible if you don't know exactly what you're doing and are following a step-by-step guide. Now, I've done step-by-step guides for, like, speedrun playthroughs before, but not 22 hours.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like, I'll do Resident Evil 4, which was, like, you know, 3 hours. Like, that's not a big deal.
But can't you save? And, like, can't you always go back to a save file?
I honestly don't know. And you know what the worst part is? You can't even cheat it with the new version of 9, because if you do, like, the speed up the time thing, it speeds up the in-game time.
Because probably that mechanic specifically.
It's so stupid.
Well, it's about the in-game clock.
Yeah. But it's just such a dumb thing. It's like, that's not a natural way to play a Final Fantasy game. You know what I mean? Like,
some would say playing with trophies isn't a natural way to play Final Fantasy.
Fair. I mean, a fair statement, but...
It's funny, though. I have a question.
I can do 13 and 12.
If there's ever a point where, say... the game, like a Final Fantasy game that you had already platinumed, came out with, like, on another console, like another PlayStation console, with another trophy list that was, like, slightly different. Yeah, would you?
I probably would. I mean, Final Fantasy VII, technically.
I mean, but, like,
I have the PS4 and the PS5 version of Remake.
Are they two different trophy lists?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Interesting. And you got platinums of both?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
You got both platinums?
Yeah, yeah. Well, because the Intergrade, you could only play on the PS5 version. So it was like, you know.
But then did you have to go back and do stuff in PS5? Or, like, did your trophies carry over?
I think...
Like, was it just additional trophies on the PS5 list? Five one that you had to get? Or did you redo all... You couldn't have had to redo all your trophies. You didn't replay the whole of Remake, did you?
For the PS5 version. Yeah, it's only one disc, isn't that sad? I'm questioning myself. I think you're right. I think it might have transferred them. But you could only play Integrate on that, so...
Right.
So maybe, yeah, I think I had to transfer my save to play Integrade, and it might have
popped the trophies. And then do the trophies for Integrade.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense.
Which I'm missing one trophy for Integrade, which is beating the Weiss fight, and that's...
What that's a failure.
I don't even want to get into
what
why that
one's impossible. What a blemish on your record.
But see, this is what I mean. Like, that's like this brain scratch where I want to go back and finish that. The Final Fantasy X one is probably the next most doable. 10 is probably going to be the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How hard is the 10 one? I've never looked. You know, if I was going to platinum any Final Fantasy game, it really should have been 10.
The only challenges with 10, there are two challenges with 10.
Are that the bosses are impossible at the end.
You have to do the lightning dodge bullshit, which I'm literally constructing a small robot to do that for me because it's bullshit.
I did do that.
And then
I did play it on my Remake version, so hopefully I have that trophy.
There you go. So then the last thing would be maxing the sphere grid, which maxing the sphere grid requires
the grinding.
It's like it's basically two playthroughs. It's not getting sphere levels. It's literally getting the material spheres. There's just not enough to fill all of them in an entire playthrough. So you have to there's some arbitrary way that you have to grind out getting actual sphere grid items.
In the remaster, I think you can get them.
I'm under the impression because
I think you can get them in like the fiend thing.
I think you either need money for them or you need... You either need money for them or you need
certain things in there that you can get them, I think.
Yeah.
I think, but I would, you know, I'm sure you have done the research. So.
Yeah. It has been made clear to me that that is the heftiest grind in this process. The S goes first.
I mean, I could do that because I already played it once. So now I just have to play it again.
There's also stuff. And the one lame one is you have to get all the all bed primers. Which I think there are two that you have to get at a certain point or you lose your chance to get them forever.
Yeah.
Which is, I believe, in the sand prison part.
Talking about 10?
Yeah.
Well, there's some on the ship, too, like in the very, very beginning. Like the first one that you get, I think. There's...
Maybe.
Oh, no. Riku gives it to you.
I'm pretty sure it's just the sand prison, which I can't remember the name of that area now.
That game is so good. Bell Home, but...
That game is so good.
It's so good.
You know the one I'm talking about with like the drill feet?
What? No.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
In Final Fantasy X, there's like a prison. No, wait, that's 8.
Yeah.
What am I talking about?
I thought you were talking about Home because Home collapses.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the something desert. I forget what the desert's called.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm mixing my games up. Okay. Anyway, enough Final Fantasy. I'm excited to play Unicorn Overlord. That's kind of like the next thing on the list.
It's interesting, man. Like the battling mechanics there, it's not like any other, like it's slightly different than some of the other tactics games. Like I thought this would be more similar to like a Fire Emblem or like a Final Fantasy Tactics kind of game.
That's kind of, I was hoping for Fire Emblem, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not like that. It's much more like party based, and each of the units, you have like a main unit and you have other separate like companions, and each of them do different things. So now you're creating interesting combos and dynamics with the characters that play together in some way. And then you move them across the map, and it's like an interesting, like as you move, you have a certain amount of like, you have like a gauge or like a certain, like a unit of measurement for like how many combat pieces you can get into before I guess the other opponents get like start moving.
Interesting.
And it's interesting. It's very, very interesting. I like how it's so funny because it's like, it's so like vanillaware, like the side scrolling, you know, action adventures, right, that they have. It's like, it's basically that, except for now it's like you're watching it play out almost like a Advanced Wars situation.
That's cool.
Where you're like putting your units here and then you fight these units and then there's like mixing and matching what's good against what and bad against others. So it's interesting.
That's cool.
I like it. It's beautiful.
Have you seen any imagery of food yet?
Yes.
They always do the most good looking food.
They do jiggling mechanics really well. Yeah. And the food is very good.
Are those independent thoughts?
Like one of the beginning scenes, I think, is like they put down like a pot of like meat stew, and it just like, yeah, both like me and the people that were watching it, they were like, ooh.
Yeah.
It's like Studio
Ghibli. They always do the food so well. Yeah. I don't know what the deal is.
But yeah, I'm excited to get into it. It seems really interesting. I like the characters so far, and the art style is just impeccable. It's amazing. It's an amazing anime style.
Yeah, today Dave the Diver came out on PS5.
Did you get it?
It was an extra, so I did download it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do that too.
God, the list is just getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
The palate cleanser.
Dave the Diver is a good jump in when you have 15 minutes to do nothing and you go diving, and it's fun.
Yeah. Like, the palate cleanser is definitely going to be Brothers, because that's like a 2-hour one and done, and I can just like shine that off. So that'll be that. You know what's still sitting in the back of my mind?
What?
Sea of Stars. Because I never finished
it. Yeah, I also never finished it. I got really freaking close to the ending, and I think something else came out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been sitting in the back of my mind for like a while. That.
Can I tell you what's trending on the PlayStation Store? Because I just went to go add Dave the Diver.
Dave the Diver.
Fallout 4 and Fallout 76.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so
Fallout 4.
Fallout 76, I thought about for a hot second.
Sense.
Fallout 4
now
is getting.
I understand the Fallout 76 also.
So I think next week.
Like the title.
Yeah.
I didn't play any of
those. I think next week, Fallout 4 is getting a native PS5 version. So it's going to be like nice and like works natively on PS5.
Right, so
should I go back and play Fallout? I feel like maybe I should.
Because Fallout 76.
Did you ever play Fallout?
I did not.
Fallout 4 is okay. 3 in New Vegas is better. Sorry, go ahead, Justin.
No, keep going.
Yeah.
Like, I played a little bit in New Vegas, but I haven't played either.
3 was sort of like the apex. That was when they figured it out, and they nailed the narrative, and they nailed everything about it. It was like 3 was a seminal game.
Yeah.
Seminal.
Is it first person or third person?
First person.
Yeah, I think that's the...
They're either. You can make it whatever you want to.
Okay.
Yeah. It's usually played first person, but also when I say that, it's not like,
is it?
You're not like playing Apex Legends shooting stuff.
Right.
You're almost never shooting a gun in real time because you're using VATS.
Yeah.
Like, so the, like, if like motion sickness or something is a thing, I wouldn't really worry about it with that.
Yeah. My sister's also
worried. Yeah, but even just walking around in first person.
You can switch it to third person.
Yeah,
it's like you just pushing the right sometimes. Stick.
My sister's the same way, and when she finished watching the entire Fallout series, she was like, is this a good game? And I'm like, I'm glad you said that, because yes, and it's free on Game Pass if you want to play it. Yeah. But knowing that Fallout 76 is coming to PlayStation 5,
Fallout
I think
4.
Fallout 4. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because 76 would be a multiplayer game, and then it's like...
76, I've heard, is still trash.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I thought it got better.
Here's your tee-ups.
Yeah, I've heard it didn't...
Fallout 3... Fallout 3 starts of your a vault dweller.
Right.
You
are you always a vault dweller?
You are born in the vault in that game. So like you know, your whole thing goes on.
You're a vaulty.
There is some
in every game are you a vault dweller?
Yes. No. Fallout New Vegas, you are a messenger.
Yeah, you just wake up in some
You are just a messenger. So that was the tee up that I was gonna give you. Three is really good because it sits you in the world correctly. Like Lucy's character in the TV show is loosely based off of the Fallout 3 protagonist. Okay. Fallout New Vegas, you're a messenger who gets shot in the head at the beginning of the game. You have amnesia and you're just figuring it out. Narratively, New Vegas, I would say, is the strongest candidate. It's like that story and that world is very, very, very well done. Three, I think, has the best like quest design and all this kind of stuff. Four kind of missed the mark in a couple of ways because that inciting event is like you are a vault dweller in a vault, but you are cryogenically frozen, mm-hmm. right? Like, so the storyline is you're outside of the vault and you're like, oh, hey, we're talking about stuff, and you see the first bomb go off and you're like, oh, shit. And then you go into the vault, cryogenically freeze yourself. At some point, you are uncryogenically frozen and your wife and child are across from you and they are also unfrozen. You are still stuck in your thing when this mysterious stranger comes in and takes your child away from your wife, who is frozen with the wife, and just runs away and then kills the wife. And then you then get out of your thing and you're like, they stole my kid and killed my wife, blah, 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 blah. And then you have to go find them. But then like almost immediately,
it's a prompt so they can study you.
Well, it's like almost immediately when you get out of the vault, it's like that plot line evaporates into the background. And then you just spend the rest of the game fucking off while this random person has your child.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just tonally very weird and like not super awesome. And it also added this whole base building mechanic. Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So four is like, it's good if you want to like kind of ignore that part of it and just be like, I just want to be in the Fallout world and play a game like that.
Now that I'm a parent, I don't think I can play that.
Mm.
Aww.
Like, I don't think I watched that scene.
I guess that was like important context. Be like, oh, I'm excited to play this game. What the fuck is this?
Yeah. I can't handle that kind of
stuff.
Which one
was that? Fallout 4?
4, yeah.
Mm.
Where like, yeah, bad things happen to children and parents can't stop it.
Yeah.
Pass.
Interesting. Liz has a weakness.
And then the whole, it's like, well, why'd they take the kid, right? And then it's like, wait, there's a library over here. Let me just see what's going on in the library. You know?
Got any bottle caps?
Yeah. I mean, literally.
Interesting.
So that game.
Which ones were made by Obsidian?
New Vegas, and that was it.
Yeah.
New Vegas is excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Really, really great game.
I think I dipped into that last year a little bit, and I realized that it still kind of holds up. I mean, it's like a little archaic in like the way that you feel like you're moving. And
yeah.
But like otherwise, it's still like a really interesting world to explore.
I think the hardest thing to stomach for those games now is the pace. It's a very slow game. It's like, you know, you're turning the volume down to like 3. Like, it is slow and ambient and all this kind of stuff.
It's not as slow as you think. I feel like it's got the Breath of the Wild kind of like, I guess it came before it, but it's got, yeah, I mean, it's got the exploration in it. It's like, what is that over there? And there's always something that leads to something, you know?
If I will say, if you're intrigued by the show, I think you will be pleased with the games because it does carry a lot of feelings there. Certain things about the show that do bother me from like a authenticity standpoint, and I think it's just me being a brat, but like stuff like,
hit me.
So for example,
spoilers if you haven't watched the show yet.
I mean, this is like not even close to a spoiler.
He always says that.
The music, right?
Okay.
Like the music, like Bing Crosby,
yeah.
Like that
very
music,
classic, you know, dystopian music.
It's great. It is so much of the vibe of Fallout. Like Fallout is this sort of like retro futurism mixed with this like really interesting like early 50s music.
The
right,
world ended in 1960s,
mid-century modern stuff. Yeah.
So in the show, that music is just playing as Lucy is going around. Whereas like contextually in the story, that's not really what happens. Like in Fallout 3, when you exit the vault, it's just like boom, boom. Like it's just ambient, you're in the wasteland music, you know, or like it's not even music. And then as you're exploring your Pip-Boy, like it says that like you've received a, like you're gaining access to a radio signal. And you're like, oh, what's that? And then you tune your radio, and that's where the music comes from. And then you're like, oh, like, where's this? What? And then you like look on the horizon and you see a city with a radio tower, and you're like, oh, that radio tower must be broadcasting this music. Let me go figure out who's in that radio tower. And then you go and you find the MC and you have this whole like thing. And it's like that sort of like organic storytelling, I think, is what makes Fallout really cool. So like,
no, they just put the music in there.
They just put it in.
They put it in there for the tone.
Like, yeah,
They want to put in the tone, and they only have an hour per episode to do so, and they need to make sure. Otherwise, it's going to be Last of Us with weird retro gear.
And that's what I mean, where it's like, this is more so me just being kind of like lame, but it would feel so much better to me if it was like, just keep the music there, but just make it sound all crackly and weird like it's coming out of her Pip-Boy.
Yeah.
You know?
And well, then I'm like, start it all crackly and weird and then transition into the normal music.
Or something. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know? So I don't know. Stuff like that is like, whatever. But that's like the most nitpicky of nitpicks, considering that everything else in the show, I think, is nailed pretty well. Yeah. Like, they nail the balance of violence and comedy so perfectly. Like, that is exactly what that game is, you know?
And also gore and creepiness and like horror with, I guess, lightheartedness and interesting. Like, the main character, or one of the main characters, the vault girl. What's her name?
Lucy.
Lucy. Fantastic casting. I think she's so good as being, like, a doe-eyed, like, you know, like...
Her eyes are gigantic.
They are huge.
I thought, because I saw, like, a promo image of her, and I was like, oh, maybe they used, like, CGI to make her... Like, maybe... I didn't play Fallout, so maybe in Fallout, like, there's some sort of, like, mutation from the...
No.
That makes her like, eyes big or, like something, and then I found out she just has giant anime eyes naturally.
I think she's, like, crazy attractive, but really striking for that role. Like, it's going to be hard to not notice her in other things now, you know what I mean?
I don't think she... Has she been in other things? I've never seen her before.
I did. I looked her up. I mean, I didn't look up any other guys because they're not as striking as her.
Yeah.
I was like, who is this girl? Have I seen her before?
It's like she's such a shoo-in to be an actress. It's like that is a face you're not going to forget. You know?
Well, I feel like in today's world, maybe not however many years ago, but I feel like now uniqueness is such a like a commodity.
A value. Yeah. The Brotherhood character, the Brotherhood actor. I forgot what
Finn from Star Wars.
Right?
looks exactly like him.
He looks like a mix of Finn and He Who Remains from Loki.
Yeah. But how do you like his acting?
I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find him very
bad.
It's kind of like
weak.
Obnoxious.
That's
like
also
obnoxious.
Why he reminds me of He Who Remains, because he was also a bad actor.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
He was also very bad in Loki.
What about the ghoul?
He's, most famous actor or actress
like
in the whole
real,
thing. I don't remember what his name is, though.
Real actor.
He's great. I like him a lot.
I think he's okay. Like... In the Fallout
he's
games,
the
ghouls
most.
Are like
doing the
it's almost
thing.
Like so ghouls are humans that have obviously been like irradiated to a crazy degree and they're basically become like immortals, right? Like that's
I did
like,
not know that.
Yeah, so that's like what ghouls are. But the way that they're typically represented in the game are like it's almost like their version of like racism, right? It's like humans look at ghouls as like the other, you know what I mean?
But they also turn into like
feral
monsters.
Ghouls. Yeah. So if being a competent ghoul is like towing a very thin line because if they are slightly more irradiated, then they become feral ghouls and they're just monsters.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's what he was doing with the chicken?
What do you mean?
When they get the ghoul in the first place?
Yeah.
Like, oh, if it's feral,
if he's feral.
He'll eat this chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
Exactly, yeah. Feral ghouls are just like, you know.
Yeah.
They're zombies.
That was not well explained to somebody who did not know the lore.
There's going to be a couple more things I'm sure you'll see. I'm sure at some point you'll see a super mutant, which sounds exactly like what it is.
Yeah. Jason had some familiar. I don't think he played it, but he had more like familiarity with the series.
Yeah.
So he kind of explained some of it to me about like the vaults and how they work and some of the other like the mutants and the ghouls and stuff. Mm-hmm.
It is as Death I'm Claws. Watching this. As I'm watching the show, it is such a very well designed like world. Like they did a really good job. Like, and I love the fact that they did steep it into like the whole 1950s, 60s, like mid-century modern, like whatever with the old music. Like it's so World's Fair-y, you know, and it's interesting. So interesting.
I think that's why that music. I was talking to one of my friends today about that music in particular and why it pairs so perfectly with retrofuturism. Because like retrofuturism is representing a point in time that's like it's tangibly real, but it doesn't actually exist. It's like that's it's like a version of the past that's it's not like
overly optimistic or hopeful for the future.
But it's like 1950s, but with robots, right? So it's like yeah. It's not real, and it's like, but it feels like it could be real, you know? And then that music is so, I think, pairs with it so well, specifically when it hits our ears, because that music even feels like it comes from a place that's also not exactly real. Like that version of history is so far removed from where we are now that it's like, how could that even be a real thing? And that's why it sort of pairs so nicely. It's an interesting thing.
I mean, it's interesting.
I feel like it's a common, I don't know why. It reminds me of WALL-E. That's what it reminds me of.
Mm.
Like, I feel like that's a common, I don't know, pairing, juxtaposition.
Yeah.
To pair, to like bring this sort of old timey,
because
seemingly positive but actually negative music,
right? Well, so I think,
and pair it with the post-apocalyptic, the world has ended.
Because you pair it, I go back to the idea of, or that feeling of like optimism. Because like you go back to that music, and it is particularly like highly optimistic and like flowery and like it is happy. But then you mix it with future. Yeah. Devastation, and it's so,
and that sets the mood,
because it's like, this is what they used to think, but this is what it really is.
Yeah.
And people are still trying to get back to, yeah, it's that feeling of longing the past. I don't know, either way
it's an interesting thing, but it's a very cool,
like, do you feel that same, like, is there
aesthetic,
is there another game that does something similar to that well, or like BioShock did something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, but that was steeped in like, well, not real history. It was like that,
but it was supposed to be like a
retrofuturism kind of thing.
It was supposed to be like a utopia, but then you entered into it at the point when you realized it was a dystopia, right?
I guess that game Atomic Heart, similar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that actress Ella Purnell,
Ella.
Is Lucy.
Yeah.
She's been in a few things. Like, she's been acting since she was young. She was in Maleficent, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, Yellow Jackets. She's the voice in Arcane.
I don't know what that is.
It's that League of Legends CGI anime.
Yeah, that did well. A couple other
she's
things.
She's doing video game stuff. That's cool.
Yeah, so I think this is her biggest role, and also maybe one of her, like, a lot of those other things, she was like young and a young actress. And now she's really, so I guess when she had giant eyes as a child, it wasn't so
It didn't striking. Catch. It wasn't as in.
Yeah, and now it's just very noticeable.
She's like, now's my time.
Yeah, I don't mean to say it in a bad way. Like, I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I like her striking eyes.
Yeah.
I think they're very interesting.
Me too.
Calm down.
Calm down.
I don't mean to sound like I'm dogging on her. That's not what I'm about.
Yeah, right. I just like big eyes. I just find it really crazy and weird.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is like the female don't empowerment podcast, you know?
Yeah. Who wants to be normal?
Yeah.
No one.
I don't.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Exactly.
I want to be normal. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Let's get into some of our news. Fallout show, dope.
Yeah. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. So far.
Yeah.
I'm very much enjoying it. Highly recommend.
I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
Speaking of television shows, apparently Comedy Central has announced that they're going to do a Golden Axe animated show.
What Weird. Is... Golden Axe.
Yeah.
Golden Axe is He-Man looking guy, girl in red bikini with a broadsword, and small Gimli dwarf guy with an axe fighting dragons and shit.
This sounds like...
It's an old arcade game.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. This sounds like it would be tailored to a specific male audience.
Yeah, like, odd. Definitely an odd choice.
In their
choice.
40s, potentially.
It's one of those times.
You have the game? Wow, the look at that. And you have
the axe
one
isn't even
for
gold.
Each of us.
No, the golden axe is the thing that they're chasing after.
So that's golden axe.
He-Man, John Carter-esque feeling to it.
Yes, exactly.
It does feel like that. Yeah, you're right.
So those are the first two games. There's actually more than that. But
yeah, but arcade. Yeah, I didn't expect this arcade-y. So it's like a 2D side-scroller.
Yeah, but
hack and slash.
Yes, exactly right. Okay. Allie and I have beat both of these games. Allie hates these games.
Yeah,
because they are wicked hard and so lame at the end. Like, let me tell you about the end of Golden Axe 1.
Tyrese Flair, that's the Amazon. I think that's the woman. Saw her mother and father massacred by Death Adder. Then you have Gilius Thunderhead, the dwarf, lost his brother to Death Adder's power, and Axe Battler.
Was it
the
only
Barbarian.
It was an arcade game.
It was an original arcade game. Yeah.
And then
these,
it came out on Genesis.
These are ports on Genesis, yeah.
Did it get ported to other consoles?
I think it's been ported on everything now, yeah. They're, like, in all of those like Sega collection things, yeah. Golden Axe is always a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's probably one of Sega's most keystone franchises. Like, if you think of like the most popular Sega games,
yeah,
like when they just did their revival thing at the Game Awards or whatever,
yeah,
it was Jet Set Radio, Crazy Taxi, Golden Axe, and Streets of Rage. Like, those were the games that it chose to.
Oh, really? It sets up with Streets of Rage.
Yeah,
interesting.
Streets of Rage is a better game, objectively. Okay.
Also, side note, who thought it was a good idea to put this textured plastic on these old games? It makes it very hard to see. It catches every light.
But I'll tell you what, it makes collecting for Genesis so much better because the boxes are almost never in like terrible shape because they're hard plastic like that.
No, great. This?
Yeah.
Death protects it?
You know what
protects
that,
the box?
Yeah. Cause, I mean, that cover art that's under there is in great shape.
Yeah.
That it texture is 100% like faux leather texture that you see on couches and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But it's very distinct. It's very of that time. You know?
Right?
Yeah.
And as soon as I saw it, it put me right back. And I was like, why was this a thing?
Exactly. It's like, I'm back in Blockbuster again.
Exactly. Yeah. It's exactly what I thought. Yeah.
Okay. So according to the network, the animated show will feature a star-studded cast, including Emmy Award winner Matthew Riss. Who's that?
He's an Emmy Award winner.
Danny Pudi.
Pootie,
Lisa Gilroy, Liam McIntyre, and Carl
Hathaway.
Tart.
How do you spell Matthew Riss?
R-H-Y-S.
Oh, Rees.
Yeah, who's that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I just know Rees as a name. He looks familiar. What do I know him from?
I'm not sure who any of these people are, but...
Oh, is he the guy in The Americans? That's probably what he won an Emmy for. Because that show is like the best show that nobody ever watched.
Who's Danny Pudi? Danny P-U-D-I. Tell me that's not pronounced Pudi. P-U-D-I, that's Pudi.
Oh, the Indian guy.
Oh,
there's only like two of them in Hollywood, and he's one of them.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. All right, he was in Community.
Yes.
Who's Lisa Gilroy?
Gilroy.
Sorry,
this has got to be. This has got to be fascinating.
As we discover
content.
Who these people are.
I don't.
Okay. Well, anyway.
That's a blonde woman.
That
blonde
certainly
white
is
woman.
A blonde woman.
Yeah.
There's a Golden Axe '80s show.
Already. Oh, so I guess she's playing the whatever.
The Amazon.
The lady.
Yeah. So interesting. I mean, Golden Axe. I feel always like. It's a beloved franchise, but I feel like it might have never hit like Saturday morning cartoon levels of notoriety.
Yeah.
So maybe that was what they're going for with this.
So yeah, I feel like either very cheesy or
yeah.
Looks
maybe
like
it will be I mean, every time I hear about one of these projects, I just think about Twisted Metal. And I'm like, that's not a game I would have played. Seems like it'd be very cheesy. Very good show. So
yeah.
What do I know?
What do you know?
I'm hopeful for all video game adaptations
exactly.
to do well.
Yeah.
Okay, so the
but
next
they
thing
will keep making more.
This was a movie.
Oh my god. That looks like an AI generated thing. Like remember when everyone was making like AI generated versions of stuff?
I guess.
Okay. Wait. Let's dig into the next topic. I honestly I'm going to put myself out there right now. I did not watch this, but there was an Indie World event from Nintendo today where they announced where they basically talked about 17 games there.
New indie
titles.
Did
you all watch it?
No. I didn't even know it was coming on today.
Yeah,
they're always a surprise. So I feel like it's always very hard to catch them. And you usually catch them.
I usually watch all of them, so I'm ashamed that I'm not up on this one, but just to give a quick rundown, there was a game called Little Kitty Big City, which looks really cute. You're like a black cat running around a town. Mm. There's some sort of customization elements. Looks interesting.
Another Stray-esque,
Yep. Atari Childish. And WayForward are essentially remaking Yar's Revenge, which is an old NES game. I was not a big fan of that, but there it is.
It looks okay.
A game called Refined Self, the personality test game.
Oh, dude, I have this on my phone.
Did you?
I literally downloaded this and bought it for experimenting purposes.
Was it cool?
For crit rate. Actually, no. I can talk about it. So the game is interesting because it does have you choose specific things, but it's quite possibly the game that we were planning on making back in 2015 when we didn't want to do the survey and we wanted to have people play a game. So, but it's slow and it takes in your decisions in turn and what you like, which direction you go into and like what catches your eye and also how long it takes you to make decisions. It's all part of the plan. And then it gives you a full readout on all the stuff, which I haven't even made it to because the game itself is pretty boring.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, none of it really makes sense. And you realize that none of these like little quests that you're going on really have anything to do with the world that you're playing. So like, it's just a weird. It
sounds like the decision to abandon this ship was the right decision.
Yeah. Well, I still have it on my phone, so I might, I don't know. But
and then
yeah.
Do they give you a personality assessment at the end?
At the end. Yeah. And it's interesting because,
did they you get your assessment or did you?
I never made it. I never made it. But anyway, I did read through some of the what would you call them?
Results.
Yeah, the archetypes, and they were interesting. I mean, some of them made sense, but like I didn't give it a shot. I mean, I didn't really finish it because it was boring. I don't know.
That's fair.
That's on them.
Yeah. Choose happiness.
Yeah, that's basically what it did.
Choose joy.
Yeah. All right, next game that they talked about was something called Sticky Business, which is a cozy business simulator where you run a sticker shop. Interesting. Not for me. Anton Blast, which we saw at PAX East this year. It's pretty cool. It's like a spiritual successor to Wario Land, the Wario Land games, but you look like you're playing as the Gangrene Gang from Powerpuff Girls.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
Love that. Valley Peaks. Valley Peaks is a first-person rock climbing platformer set in a pastel mountain range filled with riveting villagers. I think they meant to put riveting.
Yeah, I'm villagers. Assuming they're not riveting.
No, they're frogs.
Oh my god, they are.
Yeah.
No.
Riveting villagers. Yeah. As the new technician assigned to the peaks, explore to your heart's content and attempt to overcome seemingly impossible challenges. So it's another climbing game. What is with all the climbing games? Didn't you just play a climbing game?
That reminds
so,
me, I never finished Doucet.
See, there you
go.
Maybe I should.
Doucet looked good. It is interesting.
It's a little slow. Maybe you would like it, though.
It's really just the mechanics, I think, that make it novel. It's like the climbing mechanics that
And the climbing mechanic is pretty solid,
yeah.
I will say.
I heard it's better than a lot of other climbing games specifically. Yeah, that make characters like their arms are all like tied in weird ways that don't make sense.
Yeah.
But in this game, it makes sense.
It is very like intuitive, kind of.
Yeah.
And the way that you grab things and seemingly it works similarly from what I understand of climbing, which is very little. Mm-hmm. It's real climbing.
I thought the VR space would probably do this better, but it's really interesting. I assume it has something to do with all of the bouldering and the rock climbing like fad or like hobby that's becoming more and
popular.
And like you figure studios are like, we need to find a new interesting like angle here and
venue for
games. You know what I did last weekend, guys, with my girlfriend? We went climbing and it was a lot of fun. Should we make a video game out of that?
Write that down.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I assume it was created by somebody who likes to climb.
Yeah.
Nah, it's all mind grab.
All right. Let's keep going. So next is Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. So this game just has an interesting aesthetic and it's from the people that made Sayonara Wild Hearts, which I really enjoyed that game.
Oh yeah.
Did you ever play that game?
I've played demos of it.
Yeah, it's fun.
But I couldn't quite.
The art style kind of reminds me of that that one movie with Bruce Willis in it, and it was all black and white, but then there was like streaks of red in it, and that's all.
Sin City.
Was it Bruce Willis in that? It might be Sin City though.
I think that was him. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, next game, Europa. On the moon of Europa, an android named Z sets out in search of answers behind a fallen mystery of a fallen civilization. Looks like a kind of artsy game. Interesting. New Turtles game, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Splintered Fate. This is like an isometric roguelike beat-em-up style game, which looks kind of cool. Honestly, my fascination with the Turtles has kind of depleted in the last while.
Yeah.
It's hitting Star Wars levels of I'm over it, you know?
Yeah.
They've just revamped that franchise so many times.
Yeah. Cat Quest 3. I'm pretty sure the Jason is a fan of Cat Quest.
Well, it was on the Teslas. Like, he's played it because it's...
there it is.
What a thing to say.
Yeah, and, like, Jax was into, like, being in cars for a while. So there was, like, a three-month span where, like, every day we had to sit in the car for a little bit.
Aw.
Not a bad way to spend your time in the car.
Yeah, he had to, like...
What would you do in the car? Just sit.
Cars are, like, surprisingly techie nowadays. So it was, like, a screen. Kind of. And we don't really let him have screen time. So I was like, I don't know if this is a good idea. It's kind of just a screen. Yeah. So Jason would sometimes he'd let him open the apps and like
play with the air conditioner.
Cat Quest was on there and he would say like, oh, you want to see daddy like play with the cats?
Oh.
And he would let him have like 15 minutes of that.
Nice.
So like at a certain point you're like, no, this is too annoying to go to the car. Here, just take the iPad. It's fine.
So yeah. So that's how it came up. No. So Jason played some Cat Quest because Jax would see the apps on the screen and be like, cats.
And now we all think Jason loves Cat Quest.
Yeah. I've actually heard Cat Quest is not terrible.
I actually heard it was pretty good. I've only heard about that first one. I don't know anything about the second one.
It might be something I dig into at some point.
I mean, it's good enough they made three.
Yeah.
They got that Elon Musk.
Cats, man.
Next game is called Stitch, which is an embroidery game. It's like doing needlepoint, which is an interesting thing.
Honestly, like, I like the
looks
idea.
Looks like kind of a puzzle game.
I don't know how else to show you.
Sounds like an alley game.
Yeah. Next game is
not
called...
Not to typecast alley, but...
Not
literally what you're doing, but it's fine. I didn't want to say anything.
It's funny. She picks and chooses the cozy games. They're like, she's not like just default, whatever's a cozy game, I'll play. Right. You know what I mean? So she's got preferences. Next game is called Bzzzt, which is a fast-paced platformer with a retro future feel. It looks like a retro 2D side-scrolling game.
Pixel art, that is kind of...
It kind of looks like the cross between a Sonic game and a mobile game, but with shooting. I don't know.
Mm.
Next game Mega is Man. Called Skim, which
this
is
cool.
A 3D platformer that blends elements of light and shadow directly into gameplay. This aesthetic is actually very interesting. I'll do my best to describe it to the audience. It is hard pastel colors that are kind of monochromatic and a heavy emphasis on shadows and highlights. Pretty cool.
Looks like you're moving through the shadows.
Yeah.
They
kind of reminds me of a colorful Monument Valley.
Yeah, there you go.
You're not even looking at the pictures.
I see you showed me.
So next is Animal Well, which we know that's Donkey's game.
After that is
Duck Detective, The Secret Salami, a narrative adventure in which players need to use their power of deduction to inspect evidence.
This isn't made by the duck people, is it?
I don't duck think people. So. Happy Broccoli.
Oh, no, that's Goose.
Yeah, I was going to say the Goose game. People.
Yeah, no.
I don't know.
Sounds like the Untitled Goose Game.
Next game is Another Crab's Treasure, which we saw that one trailer for when we said it was the Moana crab game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then the last and highlight of the whole thing was SteamWorld Heist 2, which I'm not a huge fan of the SteamWorld games. I tried to play SteamWorld Dig for a while, but they're basically just roguelike games. This one's about stealing stuff. And that was
so...
Indie World.
I don't know anything about the SteamWorld games.
Yeah, they were hot for a while. There's like a bunch of different versions of them. But yeah, that was Nintendo's April 17th Indie World event.
Yeah,
interesting.
Some of these games are coming out soon. May,
yeah,
April,
bad.
Their release dates are August. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Coming up.
Shall we dig into the next chunk of news?
Let's do it.
Okay. This I thought was interesting. I'm not really sure how much there is to say here, but PlayStation is officially bringing trophies to their PlayStation or their PC releases. So okay. Ghost of Tsushima came out on Steam. They're adding a PlayStation overlay to it, sort of like the Xbox overlay.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to earn trophies in the PC version of Ghost of Tsushima.
Hmm.
And it'll add to your total trophy count.
It's about time.
So PlayStation is working on PC, basically. Like, they've created tech so that you can link your PlayStation account with your PC games.
Yeah, so
that's wild.
Or at least PlayStation
called
published
up Justin,
titles.
They said, we have a gift for you.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. The thing is, I'm never going to play on PC. Like,
yeah.
I don't think there's any reason for me to ever play something on PC. So unless they had, like, a PC-specific game that was tied to PlayStation in some way that just made more sense to play on PC. Yeah. I don't think this really affects me at all. Although
there's pretty much nothing I would rather play on PC.
Yeah. I am intrigued by the by this overlay thing. I almost wish that you could access that without the game, like just so you could kind of be, because it's really not easy right now to, like, if you're on a PC, you can't really see what your what friends you have online or what they're playing. Like, you have to use the app for that, and the app is quite good, but it's just like, I don't know, I just wish there was like a PC module or or application that I could open that would just show me like, this is what's going on in your PlayStation, you know, world. That'd be cool. Okay, next, we said we had some Baldur's Gate news. Well, the so Hasbro, which I believe is the publisher, Baldur's Gate IP owner, Wizards of the Coast, that's Hasbro.
Yeah, they,
has addressed
they own D&D.
They have addressed the future of the franchise following the news that developer Larian won't be making another game in the series. Last month, Larian boss Sven Vinke said that Larian was moving on from the Dungeons & Dragon universe as it wants to try its hand at something else. But then... we're now talking to a lot. So this is Hasbro. Hasbro then said, we're now talking to a lot of partners and being approached by a lot of partners who are embracing the challenge of what does the future of Baldur's Gate look like. So it looks like they're courting other developers to extend the success of Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, I mean, you can't make a game like Baldur's Gate 3 and then not follow it up. That would just be...
I mean, you can... But I mean,
Larian's doing it. But,
but could...
I just mean, like, if you own the IP, there would be... I can't imagine coming to the boardroom and being like, so, well, I know we just hit it out of the park. Leave it all behind.
Yeah, we're done now. Yeah. We're done now. Yeah, no, definitely not.
I thought we're not going to capitalize on that success at all.
Yeah, so...
So they're not making... They are making...
They're going... They're... prospecting the next game in the franchise, but Larian will not be doing it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so they're trying to get another developer.
I see.
Or a studio.
So do you think that that is going to fly? Or is the joy that came from Baldur's Gate 3 strictly a reflection of Larian's efforts?
I mean, I think it probably is a reflection of Larian's efforts. I mean, for what they did, it's not... It was, is such a revelation, kind of. And that came from them, wholly. But now that it's out there, like, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. You can just kind of capitalize on what Larian's already done and hopefully not fuck it up. So I feel like at this point, you just need to not fuck it up. You need to write a good story.
It's going to be hard.
And you need to utilize what the groundwork they've already put down.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, what ideas they've used and concepts and whatever to develop your mechanics and gameplay.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it can be done now that, you know, a genius has already done it once.
Yeah.
Right.
It just seems like a pretty daunting task, though. I mean, yeah. I feel like you need to have some really competent people behind the wheel to be able to create something so complex.
Yeah.
I feel like there's so many campaigns that have already been made that people think are great that, like, there's so much content. Like, and then you just look at Larian's...
You can write anything. You know, yeah, think about all the D&D campaigns all across the world that people are writing.
Yeah.
Is Baldur's Gate 3 just, like, truncated D&D?
It's straight up D&D. It is D&D.
It's exactly D&D.
The weapons are all stacked, like, it's D&D.
But the narrative, like, what they wrote, these characters.
It doesn't matter. You know this. D&D is definitely, I don't know, actually, that's a good question. I'm not sure if Baldur's Gate is, like, a...
Because I know, like, Pathfinder is, like, its own thing or whatever.
It's a place in that world, but... But, like, I'm not sure if,
so,
like...
So, like, all of the races, the items...
Yeah, they're all pre-written.
System, like, all of that is
and then,
from...
But the I'm story. Saying, like, specific, like, then this boss comes out, like...
I don't know. Like, you write your own campaign, and I guess you can use, like, pre-written ones. It's not a pre-written campaign, but...
There are pre-written.
But it's, like, those...
Yeah, so, I mean, like, so you can play D&D with a pre-written campaign, but that's not what I think of.
But I'm saying,
but I'm
just saying, this game, like, when they wrote this game, was it like you had a board game, something Drizzt or whatever. Yeah, yeah. It's like,
wow, good call.
You know, that's like, exactly isn't that, that's a pre-written campaign. Yeah. That is like, so these characters do these things and then this happens.
Baldur's Gate 3 is not a pre-written campaign.
Yeah, I think they're all different. Yeah. I think they're all different. They follow different characters.
It's a unique
But that's why I'm saying.
So that's
onto that, its own.
But I guess like, that's what I'm saying. It's
in
like,
it, like the Mind Flayers and how that all works, like some of yeah. that is pulled from existing lore.
Fair. I guess what I'm getting at is like, isn't the special sauce of this game those interactions and how well these characters are written and like the way that things are happening?
I think it is partially the story for sure, but I also think that I don't think any other game has pulled off D&D
mechanics.
Yeah. Digital D&D like this ever before, which made it so fantastic. And it's primarily just how dynamic the story can get with your choices and such.
And people have tried.
But that's why I'm saying.
Like, there are like some online D&D things that people try to do, but it's not.
But
nowhere near this level of detail and polish. So it's a marriage of both, right? So that's why it's just like they have to hit the story and they have to either keep or improve the mechanics.
That's why
improving the mechanics is what I'm most concerned about. It's like I feel like some other studio is going to take it and be like, we're going to take our own spin at it. That's what they did. And we're going to try it our way. And they're going to launch something that's not nearly as good.
Well, there's also,
go on. Like if I was the next studio, I would just boil down what Larian did to the T of how many interactions, like what kind of relationship, like, and just replicate the formula and then just put a new story into it, and that's what people would buy. It'd be easy. Yeah. You don't have to do anything new. Stop it.
Just be conservative. Just want to play another D&D campaign.
Mm-hmm. There is the possibility that they go into a different direction with it also. Like I'm pretty sure
Battle Royale.
Well, I'm pretty sure Baldur's Gate 2, there's one on GameCube and PlayStation 2 called, it was called Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. That was another Baldur's Gate game that I think took place after 2, and that was a top-down beat-em-up game.
Hmm.
Like, not a...
So it was just in the world of the D&D, but it's not D&D.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Sort of like the Vermintide is like in that Warhammer world or whatever. Yeah.
Interesting. It's funny because like the more I think about it, the more I'm like, imagine if there was just a Baldur's Gate console and then you're just slotting in like cards that like change up the story with, I don't know.
I think some people would be there for it. You know?
Yeah, I think so too. Because everybody wants the D&D game without having to do all the D&D math.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be 100%. Nice if there was just a game that did it for you?
Stuff like Queen's Blood is great because then it's like I don't have to worry about the equations. It's just happening.
Yeah, that is the worst part.
You just don't want to have it. Not everybody. Some people want the responsibility of being a DM, but that's so much work. It's just so much homework.
All I want to do is play D&D, but I also just don't want to play D&D.
Right, exactly. I want a game that's like as free and as like dynamic as Baldur's Gate 3. I don't want to do the work to do it. Do it for me.
Yeah, and it's so much easier than having to be like, wait, can I do this? And like, what check could that be? Like, okay, so wait, I did my bonus action, but do I have a spare bonus action? And then which, is that still a bonus action again? Or is it a regular action? And like it takes all of that questioning
you imagine
your DM
can you imagine the QA time that it took to math out and work on all the classes and then all the story arcs and all the decisions and how they affect other parts in the story and then making sure that all that code was working
to, like, make sure all the interactions happen the way they're supposed to
know what I mean? And it's just like I can't imagine that QA was fun or easy, and that Excel spreadsheet is probably miles long or whatever Figma that they're using statements. It's like, but wait, I did this on the first hour of the game and I'm now in 130th hour and it shouldn't have been like this
so
character
now
was
when
dead
I run into the Gith Yankee over here and if I don't have Lazelle with me because she's not with me or I didn't get her originally,
exactly,
like it should have scaled in a certain way or something.
There's a major main character within the first like 15 minutes of the game that it's just like, maybe you don't get her.
Yeah.
Then how does that game work? How do you get the artifact?
Yeah. That's a good point.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That would be... I have no idea how that game would work.
That's why you would replay that game.
I mean, that game would be still beatable, I assume.
Would it?
I don't know.
Could you do it without the artifact? Or would maybe you run into the artifact later because she gets killed with it? I don't know. I have no idea.
We should try it on our second run through. Anyway,
there you go. So interesting. So, the future of Baldur's Gate currently undecided.
It's a huge
in flux.
I mean, ideally, you would want Larian to do it again because it is such a great job. But if Larian said, "I'm not doing it," I would want someone to pick it up.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that exhale when they finally finished that game and it went gold and they're like, "Wow. Oh my God, guys, I will never do this again."
Probably.
Yeah, right?
I'm looking at these other two topics and I feel like we should have ended with this one because this was very interesting.
Yeah.
Which one?
But we'll dig into the last two. No, this Baldur's Gate.
Are these next two not as interesting?
They're just kind of whatever. We'll just bash through them.
Okay.
Hades 2 technical test is now open. So people are playing Hades 2.
I've been thinking about Hades a lot lately.
Do you have an interest in Hades 2?
Not really. I have an interest in Hades 1.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm... I kind of hate that Hades 2 is a thing because I really love Supergiant. I really love Supergiant, and it bothers me that, like, why would you do this? I understand that it was, like, your most successful game you've ever done. But it's
do
like,
you think it really came from them?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they self-published all this stuff.
Yeah. Self-published?
I believe so.
I can only imagine that.
I'm pretty sure they are.
Can you imagine? I mean, okay, let's think about it, right? Hades came out in, what, 2020? During the COVID?
Might have been 2019.
I wonder whether
or
not...
Sure? Are you checking?
Yes.
Thank you.
Because I wonder whether or not they did so well on that. And it's
2020.
Sorry. And so then at a certain point, there was like
a... It's 2018.
Yeah, okay.
But I think that's because
it had that
out.
Early access thing on Epic Game Store or whatever.
So that was the initial launch date. I think was the Epic Game Store one, and then I think it came in 2020 on the Switch.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, what I was trying to get at was, what do you think the decision? What do you think were the factors to the decision, other than obviously money and Hades is doing so well? What was the game prior to Hades? Was it Pyre?
Pyre.
How well did that sell? Probably not.
It didn't, but that was a big experiment. But so, before that was Transistor, and Transistor
that was
murdered.
That was great. Yeah. So then the question...
Dude, I
also don't think that Pyre was, like, terrible. Like, I don't think it commercially did very well.
No,
but, like,
it got... Yeah, critically, it did quite well. Yeah. But, like, it was not even, like... I mean, it didn't even come close to Transistor or Bastion.
Transistor was cool.
So
I didn't
different
beat that either.
From...
Dude, I listened to the Transistor soundtrack recently.
Dude, I've been listening. That's fascinating.
It's yes, they do
so
self-publish.
Good.
You're right. They self-publish.
Vanishing Point. Cycles sync up sometimes.
Whoa, that's weird. What song did you listen to? The Spine?
I don't know. I just have the OST. I haven't even played the entire game. I've just been feeling... I know. I did play it, and I did love a lot of the things, like the mechanics and the functions that you would put into your abilities and your passive skills.
What didn't you finish?
Transistor.
Oh.
I played it a bit, and I did like it a lot.
To the end?
I didn't know what took me away from it. I do want to go back into it.
Do you know what happens at the end?
No. Don't tell me. No, tell me. I want to beat that eventually.
I mean, I feel like I would be well within my rights to tell you.
Yeah, that's fine, but that would just be...
I mean, I would...
That would just be violence now. You don't need to do that.
If I wanted to choose chaos, I feel like I would have a right to. You should have finished this game by now.
All right. It came out don't punish me.
Many years ago.
All right. I'll play the game.
It's such a
Yeah, it was
game.
A long time ago. It was like 2015 or some shit.
You have no
Bastion,
right to walk into any room.
No. You didn't finish Bastion either?
I didn't really play it until way later than everybody was like, it should be played. And then I bought it on some Humble Bundle. And now I also have it on
Switch.
And
then you started playing and you're like, wow, this is actually really cool.
It was cool.
The narrative on it
The
is
narrative
so awesome.
Part was cool. But anyway.
My interaction with Bastion is the same.
Really?
It was like, oh, everybody told me to play this. And I started playing. I'm like, hey, this is really fun.
That's literally what happened.
Was Potts the one that told you? Because he was
Potts,
like, super gung-ho on Bastion.
It might have been his 60-second lore, actually.
Yeah.
That was, I think, the first time I heard Bastion. Yeah.
I liked Bastion. I fucking loved Transistor. And honestly, I loved Pyre, too.
The art style on Transistor is very good. Pyre, from what you and Alex told me about it, made me kind of like, eh. But I do really like Supergiant as, like, a concept, as, like, their... They're like who they are. And then Hades 2 definitely does bring you back to the conversation and the subject. Hades 2 definitely does seem like a weird stray off of their usual cool factor, which is doing cool shit. You know what I mean? Hades 2.
Doing
but then
new
interesting stuff. And then the question is, what do you think brought them to that decision? It could just be the money. Hades could be ridiculous in sales, which I'm sure it was. Switch was probably a fantastic play for them to put that on the Switch, right?
Right.
But is there a chance that they were going for something more conservative because the way the industry was looking at that time?
Very possible.
Mm-hmm. Like, when did they announce it?
Also, I would wonder...
Hades 2?
Yeah. Was it like 2022? I think it was
2 years ago.
Yeah, Game Awards? They started working on it.
Hades
2. Okay, what year is it? 2024.
Yeah.
So, Hades got really popular in 2020, right? Like 2022. That, but it came out in 2020.
Yeah, it went like mainstream.
So they must have decided pretty early that they were going to make a second one. If they announced it in 2022, they must have already been working on it. I mean, obviously they had been working on it because they had just released a game.
They began development, quote unquote, in earnest at the start of 2021. So they had already known after 2020 that they were like, this game's selling so well, Hades 2 is probably the next thing. I mean, maybe they just thought there was like an easy jump from the storyline and they had like inspiration to do so, but
I'm sure there was a lot of like unexecuted ideas from the first game.
That's what I think. I think that often...
Tears of the Kingdom kind of idea?
Very often I think that developers or, you know, whoever, when you make something, particularly when you make a game, that like you have all these ideas and then you have to leave stuff on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
And then like if you get the chance to do it again, I think they want to finish what they started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a lot of content that was like, dude, that's a good idea, but we can't put it in this game. It's like, okay. Yeah.
Did you watch the dev diary of Hades?
No.
That was a cool watch. That was a cool watch.
I'd be down for that though.
I'm sure it was a conservative choice. They had ideas, unfinished ideas.
Hopefully they're working on something else. And honestly, the soundtrack to Hades is really, really good too.
It will sell.
Yeah, no doubt about that. No doubt about that.
But sequels always sell worse than their prequels.
Correct.
So, interesting.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what comes of it. All right, last topic we've got here.
Hit me.
With your best shot.
According to...
Fire away.
Beautiful.
Sorry.
I want you to serenade me all the time.
Yeah. Dude, just ask. I'm down. I'm ready. Yeah. Put me in, coach.
Did you ever dabble in singing?
Yeah, I did a cappella for 2 years in college.
Did you really?
Yeah, I thought it was a cool...
You seem like you got this vibe about you.
I thought it was a cool way to meet girls.
It wasn't.
And you were right.
Did you meet any girls that way?
Yeah, but...
Not cool ones?
Yeah, we'd go to like... We'd go to like concerts with other dude. We were at Rider, right? So okay, we don't have to talk about this.
Okay. So the last thing was Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Yeah. More Final Fantasy VII news. In a translated Ultimania book, there was basically a conversation between Nomura and Kitase,
I heard about this.
Where they were saying that they're hoping that they will be able to deliver part three. In 3 years,
yeah,
which would cut the timeline between Remake and Rebirth by a year. So Remake and Rebirth was 4 years, 2020, and then 2024, and then
I'm kind of imagining
3 years seems
based
like
based on nothing that Rebirth is the largest game.
I would assume that would be correct,
right?
But there's part of me that's like even. I am frankly shocked that they were able to get Rebirth out in just 4 years. This game is massive.
Yeah.
Like, it is a huge content-rich game. And now I know the...
Templates, right? It's a lot of reused formulas that they do from place to place. And like,
even still, just on a dialogue, just on a quest design, just on a QA standpoint, like, there's just
and
so...
The world's...
There's just so much.
Like there's a lot of different areas that they had to
even if they were like, we don't need to touch the battle system at all, and they just removed that entire section of it, it's like there's still an insane amount of game there that they were able to put together in 4 years. It's nuts. And you presumably in part three, we're going to get playable...
Highwind.
Vincent, playable Cid... Highwind,
yeah,
you know.
But it's funny because like
they're big things.
Are we gonna get playable?
Why would you not?
Playable Cid.
Playable Cid. Oh no, yeah.
Yeah.
Cid and Vincent, they I think
are playable in the.
So in the developer like interviews that I've been like reading and like watching and like hearing people talk about, like they've talked about like that the development of the next game is going to be much easier, only for the fact that they've already built the entire world and they just have to add in new stuff. They're focusing primarily on Wutai as being like the next big chunk of that next game, which means that they really have to make Wutai as kind of like big and like interesting as basically like the mid-gear portions. But then you're also like, where's Medeal? Are they going to add that in?
I feel like Wutai is not
Rocket Town
area.
It wasn't a big thing.
Wutai was
then.
Very underbaked in the first game.
It was completely optional.
I think it was probably the most important piece of the story that was the least developed. Because like the war between Shinra and Wutai is like, not it's a major motivating factor for much of what's going on from the Shinra side of the equation. But like, we don't really see what's going on. And you just kind of arrive in this vaguely Asian town and they're like, this is this whole culture. And you're like, this place is like three screens.
That's
like, what are we talking about?
Is walking into the little towns, the little buildings that look like
pagodas.
It's like you're telling me this three screen vaguely Asian town is an entire nation that's fighting Shinra. So like that doesn't make sense.
And
you know,
Yuffie runs away.
That's what the developers.
Your only warrior that we can speak of, other than the dude that's like sitting at the top of the tower. It's like this is Wutai, you know.
The one thing that was interesting that they were talking about was how they have to turn Wutai from that into something that would essentially be a threat to Shinra. So now they have to.
That's what I mean. Like, it's got to be a nation, you know? Like, that was my expectations.
It's got to be that whole white area on the map.
Literally. So that top, area is supposed to be, I think, Rocket Town, right? And Wutai is supposed to be all the way west in a weird separate continent. And then Medeal is all the way on the east side on a separate continent, which I don't know why they would ever go to Medeal now.
What do you think they're going to call Bahamut Zero?
Who?
They decided to call Neo Bahamut, Bahamut Arisen.
Oh, yeah. I always think they change the names of Bahamut all the time. Like, it's never the same, is it?
Well, it's like, I mean, the design of Bahamut Arisen is clearly Neo Bahamut.
Yeah.
Like, clearly. So, like.
Oh, interesting. I didn't really even put any thought to this. They're going to rename Bahamut Zero.
So, what's Bahamut Zero going to be? You know? They're going to call it Space Bahamut?
I hope so. overall, though, I thought that it's weird. 3 years. Okay, understandable. I feel like I guess they have their work cut out for them for sure. But in the same sense, like having most of the world already built out and being able to like take that and template it out, I figured it would just be a bunch of copying and pasting. I didn't think it was going to take 3 years. I thought people were like, oh, it's going to be like much sooner than you think. I thought it was going to be like 2 years or like next year, but I guess that was too optimistic.
Just about right.
I think 3 years is correct.
Yeah,
you're probably right. I was hoping for it to be shorter, but whatever.
It's
4 years is long. 2 years, I've been like, whoa, that's quick.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. 3 years, just right.
Yeah, Goldilocks.
That's enough to like have a year to forget about it, and then get like the anticipation trailer and freak out for a year, and then it comes out.
Right. Yeah,
and then some sort of DLC comes out 6 months before. Some sort of integrate.
Yeah, what would the DLC be?
Maybe it would be Rocket Town.
It's weird though. They're not doing any DLC for this.
Definitely not.
Yeah, I think they said that they weren't doing any like additive DLC stuff. I think the only DLC that they talked about is potentially new Queensblood bullshit.
I mean, classify Integrate as?
Yeah, it wasn't really DLC. It was more like a
forgotten
expansion.
Chapter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's DLC.
I did have a theory about
literally
this.
DLC. Yeah. But I feel like they wouldn't categorize it that way.
I did have a theory about this, but I'll share it after the podcast. Some spoilery territory.
Oh, okay.
What do you? Because I have some.
We'll talk about it after the podcast. But yeah, 3 years, pretty interesting.
I'm excited.
I gotta finish this game first.
I think I need a 3 year cooldown.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
After what I just endured.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think it is time to put it through a lot in this podcast. It's done. You put the pin in, took it out.
Bye, guys.
Came out dry. It's good to go. All right. We will be back next week, hopefully with something other than Final Fantasy VII to talk about. Likely the following week when we are on with Alex, that will probably be our spoiler cast for Final Fantasy. So we'll be going in, collect your notes, prepare yourselves. I imagine that will be a long one.
Was that going to be May 1st?
The first week of May, whatever day that lands on. I think it's like May 4th or something.
May 4th is a Saturday.
Then it's probably the first.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. But until then, thank you, Liz, and thank you, Justin.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
Let's start the podcast. Oh.
Nope.
Later.
Bye.